What's it like to be loved by a madman? Auron knows it's brutal. She knows it's sweet. She knows one rarely outweighs the other. When her husband tells her he's cursed, Auron, daughter of Conn of Kyanacht and wife of King Sivna of Dol Áireithe, has a baby on her hip and a meeting in 40 minutes. Was it St. Ronan? Aye, her husband agrees. When he isn't king, he works in construction, the rolling hillside of his arms forever sun-kissed. He's a big man with a red beard that catches the light when he laughs. You remember so? Back in May, St. Ronan traipsed their apartment building, hammering on people's doors, urging them to do the right thing in the upcoming marriage referendum. He got to the nice girls next door, the daughters of Eretek. They could hear the words apostate and abomination rattling through the walls. Auron turned to Sivna to make a joke about working through the alphabet, just in time to see her husband slam open their front door. Sivna was the king. He felt it his duty to grab St. Ronan and haul him by the neck onto the street. Never mind that he'd been in a towel at the time. Never mind that she'd grabbed at the towel and it came away in her hand. "Ma malach there, Sivna," the saint hissed from the wet footpath, orange-lit mist descending between the street lamps. Spittle gathered at the edges of his mouth in a yellow-white paste, his cheeks flushed with anger. 'Twas a curse, to be sure, but Sivna let out a few expletives of his own. He took the towel his wife was urgently pushing into his hand, and they went back inside. Auron had thought no more of it.
"You idiot."
"Yeah," he agrees, leaning over to take the baby. "Sorry." They both have things to be getting on with. They say they'll talk about it later. They don't. It sits like a black stone at the bottom of each conversation, waiting to be known. The floods come to Ireland that year, portents of times to come. Storm Frank ravages the land, the lack of romance in the name compounded by the devastation wreaked. The Apollo House occupation sheds light on rising homelessness, and Gull MacMorna kills the father of Fionn MacCool. However, the centenary celebrations unite the country. The water charges are scrapped, and the Irish rugby team beat the All Blacks for the first time in history. In fairness, if you were looking for portents, it could have gone either way. But the Battle of Magrath happens. Things go wrong after that. Sivna isn't bloodied, but he's hollow behind the eyes. He couldn't take the noise, the blood, the violence. Everything that made him a warrior warped against him and something snapped. That night, Auron wakes to an empty bed and finds him sitting in the dark, staring out at the flickering streetlights. She feels like a ghost as she steps towards him, always small and pale. "Moon-kissed," he calls it. Sivna reaches without looking and takes her hand, gripping hard, like he's desperately trying to tell her something he can't get past his teeth. "Have you ever wondered what it's like to be a bird?" he asks, eyes bruised with lack of sleep. Her skin pebbles and pricks. She doesn't reply. "Rent's due tomorrow," he says, letting go and taking a drink from the can by his side. This is a statement to be considered, because Sivna is no longer king, not since he fled from battle. Sivna is no longer working in construction either. Auron's husband isn't working at all, and rent is due tomorrow. Auron is a project administrator for UCD. In the land of self-important saints, pompous scholars and spear-wielding fenians, it demands her fine way with words and brutal determination. Auron is smart. She has an income. She can wait for this storm to pass. But weeks go by, and Sivna has stepped to the left of reality. The noise of the battle, the curse, the ever-rising pile of bills, some treacherous chemical imbalance in his brain, the cause is irrelevant. Auron's husband is broken. Auron goes to Dame Street Medical Centre to speak to a medical professional. Sivna won't consider accompanying her. Is it coughing blood I am, is it? He's jovial, balanced on a chair, painting the walls and ceiling with black leafless trees. The thin, stretching branches are like cracks in the sky. He hasn't slept in days. She can't remember the last time he ate. The doctor is kind, but in the end all she gets are soft words about poor mental health among Irishmen and a bunch of pamphlets. She returns home to find him still painting, their living room devolving into a nest balanced precariously on the thin branches of illusory trees. Sivna scratches his stubble as he looks down at the pamphlets. "Ah, no," he says, a distinctly ovine cast about his visage. "Sure, what would I be wanting those for?" Trump is voted into office, a petty incarnation of Balor of the Evil Eye. Brexit survives, an unlikely fetch, a doppelganger of common sense speaking in false promises. Sivna takes to the trees. Sometimes the trees are the pub. Sometimes the trees are the streets that he paces endlessly. Oren goes to the priest. She sits in a beam of sunlight, cut and coloured by stained glass windows of sad-faced saints. The priest blows his cheeks into globes with road maps of broken veins. "Maybe he should come back to Mass," is the commiserating consensus. "Maybe he should get more sun." Oren is darkly gleeful she neglected to mention the curse came from a saint. There's another royal wedding. Queen Maeve dumps Cruachan mac Nessa to marry her toy boy bodyguard, Alil. Oren tries to remain above scandal, but it's nice to think about something other than rent, heating, electricity. That is, until she gets a wedding invitation and realises they can't afford to go. They can't afford the cost, and they can't afford the stigma. Oren is glick, raised in the whispers and gossip of royal courts. She loves her husband, her sun-kissed madman, but she is beginning to realise he may be their ruin. Sivna comes into her room in the middle of the night and whispers about the stars. He moves around heavy furniture at 3 a.m. with effortless strength. He brings her bunches of feathers and eerie bouquets. Oren goes to the witch. She sits in a living room filled with the oppressive smell of cat, sipping weak tea. She's wearing dark lipstick, hoping it makes her look older, wiser. She catches sight of her reflection in the curved tin teapot. She looks like she has a mouth of bruised blackberries. "Should have come to me first," the witch says, needle and wool flying through her fingers. "But I suppose these things must be done in threes." Oren tries surreptitiously to rub the smear of lipstick off her cup, praying it doesn't stain. "He's getting bad." The witch nods, her rocking chair squeaking with each tilt of her toes. "Will he kill himself?" Oren asks, with the bluntness that women reserve for when there's no men present to upset. "Ah, no," the witch reassures her. "He'll die by spear through his chest while drinking milk from cow dung in his madness." "Oh," Oren says, because she thought she'd be told she was overreacting. "Right," she says, for want of something to say. "Will you have another cup?" "I'm grand, thanks." "Ah, you will," the witch says, already pouring. Oren drinks it. Oren goes to work. She collects their daughter from the childminder and makes sure she's fed and warm, even while the nets get tighter, the bills pile higher. Sivna is on the streets more often than not. He engages in operatic levels of self-destruction, and she resents that she is thankful he does it from a distance. Bwilya Sivna, they call him. Mad Sweeney. Oren thinks maybe madness is a luxury confined to men who aren't bound to keep the household functioning. Then she catches herself, briefly furious that her circumstances have turned her into the sort of person who thinks such things. Sometimes things are about men, and sometimes things are about women. Sometimes things are about people. Sometimes things are about survival, and sometimes love isn't enough. One day, he's leaving, and Oren tells him not to come back. Their daughter's name is Brona. The rent review hits when Brona is 4 years old. Oren is the daughter of Conn of Kyonoth. When she is evicted, she sells everything she owns, barely breaks even, and returns to her father's halls. Oren meets her misfortune with numb acceptance of necessity and the indisputable luck of her birth. Her father calls Sivna a gurrier and a fool. Her mother describes the randy misdeeds of Cuchulainn, how Ymir stands by her man. It's a lonesome wash that there's not a man's shirt in. Oren marvels at their opposing stances, both equally incorrect. Life goes on. Oren goes on as she always has. The commute to work is a pain in the hole, but she continues being exceptionally competent at her job and puts aside money for the day that Tuatha Dé bless her with affordable accommodation in Dublin. Her parents watch Brona whenever she goes for a drink with Guerra, son of Congal, equal in title to the sovereignty which Sivna abandoned. She tries not to let their furious approval put her off. This year is for Manon a Héireann. Oren feels it in her bones. Around the world, women are drawing daggers and pulling their oppressors to the light. A grassroots tribe of warrior women leads the way to referendum. Macha Mongrua takes the throne as High Queen of Ireland at Emon Macha, and Oren is up for a cushy promotion at work. She's at Guerra's home in Rathmines when Storm Emma hits. She's never been one for snow, so she waves him off to go sledding with his warriors on Pope's Cross Hill. It is in this manner that Oren is alone when she realises that, for the first time in an age, she can't think of anything to worry about. A sparkling glass of rosé in hand, she opens the door onto the patio and steps out. The snow falls in fat flakes. In the silence, it seems like each gentle touch on the ground should let out a high, clear sound like the top notes of a piano. She knows he's there before she sees him. Beyond the pool of light, Sivna stands surrounded by immaculate snowfall. His face is dirty. There are feathers on his clothes. "Do you remember, lady?" he asks, voice low and hoarse. "The great love we had for each other when we lived together?" Oren is not wistful, but she has always told the truth. "I wish we could be together," she tells him. "I wish we could grow feathers so I could roam through light and dark with you every day and every night." Mad Sweeney breathes out, a plume of mist flowing from his mouth. "It's better for you to give love to someone who stays by your side than to a dreadful madman." For a moment, Oren allows herself to imagine what it's like to be a bird. Then she says, "Yes." Sometimes things are about love, and sometimes things are about survival. Oren knows that sometimes one outweighs the other. Oh, but barely. Only barely. Footsteps and laughter approaching, Guerra and his warriors return. Sivna holds his fingers to the night sky before pressing them gently to his lips. Moon-kissed. He's gone. The snow is pristine and white. There are no footprints to be seen. Tomorrow is another day in her life that goes on. When she turns to meet it, Oren is whole.